inviting me to give a talk at Perimeter. It's a really beautiful place. Today I'm going to talk about Coulomb phases and anomalies. I'm going to try to use geometric approach to 5D-6D theories. So this is a mathematical physics talk. I'm going to go back and forth between math and physics, which might sound not connected, but it'll all come together in the end. So first of all, I'm going to start with the motivation. So throughout the talk, as the title is speaking on its own, I'm going to try to understand physics. Via top-down approach geometrically. And today I'm going to focus on a talk for the physics that's in explicitly 5D-6D theories with 8 supercharges. And hereby geometrically, I'm going to use elliptic vibrations. What I mean is that I'm going to consider from top-down approach, so I'm going to use Calabi-Yau compactification, and I'm only going to consider elliptically fibered Calabi-Yaus. So then what is this elliptic vibration? So in order to use elliptic vibration, I'm going to use this thing called Weierstrass model. So for that, I'm going to use first some notations. L will be a line bundle over a quasi variety B. And I'm going to define the projective bundle of lines. To be this. That this is a projective bundle I'm going to use, then Weierstrass model will be defined as an elliptic vibration. I'm going to use Y as a vibration that's cut out by the zero locus of a section of the line bundle given by O3 cross projected L to the sixth in this x is 0. And this locus can be now used as a Weierstrass equation. Then I'm going to write in a short form in the Tate notation. That will be given as y squared z, x cubed, fxz squared, and gz cubed. So here then the discriminant is given by the coefficients of f cubed and g squared. Now this is a locus of a singular fiber. And J invariant, which characterizes smooth fibers up to isomorphism, is given by also the coefficients. I'm going to utilize the discriminant, and it'll be given by this. Good. O1 is on the base? On the X is 0. Yeah. Oh, that's B, yes.
And that is that the same as O time? But then there is O3
left. Yeah, oh, so let me actually explain your section then. So that's coming from the fact that you have x, y, z as a projective coordinate. So for that, so z will be in the section of x, 0, 1. So that's on here. And that will be y is the cubed, so it'll be cubed, right? Yeah, right. That's, yeah. And that will be the section of squared. All right, so a few key points. First, there's a Kodera classification.
So F and G are also sections.
That's right. Yeah. So Kodera has classified all the possible singular fibers and monotomies around them in codimension one. The second point is that there's Tate's algorithm that's used for defining the type of the geometric fibers of the Kodera type. And that's by the manipulating the coefficients of the F and G by using its valuations. And from here, now it connects to physics, that Vapa has linked this to the gauge theories and the AD algebra. Gauge. So good. So from here, I'm going to actually consider as a demonstrative example of a simple G, simple Lie algebra, or Lie group, with the Lie algebra G. Then I'm going to call this as a G model to encode an elliptic vibration using this Weierstrass model that encodes a particular Lie group of G. So this one is then given as an elliptic vibration with a discriminant locus containing particular irreducible component that contains a divisor that gives this type of ADE algebra. So, and the generic fiber over any other components of the discriminant will be then irreducible, meaning it'll be like Kodera of type I1 or 2. And it'll be a degenerate on top of the divisor that you encode it into particular this ADE algebra type of algebra that you code into. Oh, so there's a few little notes to use these formalism. The first one, so our G models are actually usually singular. So for that, that's very difficult to actually use. So in order to consider, so we're going to use Crappin resolutions. Which resolve the singularities. So Crappin resolution means that it just does not change the canonical divisor, a canonical class. So for that, what it means is that this is going to give you a smooth model in the end. And then you can actually incorporate this to compute geometric data or topological invariants. So from here, then how do you actually get the Crappin resolutions? So we're going to identify a Crappin resolution. By a sequence of blowups resolving the singularities. Good. All right, so that was enough geometry for the moment. But as I was saying in the beginning, we're going to try to use this to understand physics. So how does this actually help us to understand the 5D and 6D theories?
You can use a lot more word than that.
Oh, that's true. I'm so not used to this. It's wonderful. I'm going to continue on then. All right. So I'm going to use this picture from M theory and its dual F theory. And they can be compactified on the elliptically fibered collabial threefold, where we are going to use the elliptic fibration structure entirely coming in. And here we're going to get 5D theories with 8 supercharges. And you have the same number of supercharges here as well, which will lead into 1,0 theory. And it is conjectured from the F theory standpoint that if there's, since there is actual explicit duality, that there is always an uplift. So we're going to try to understand that, meaning we're going to try to understand if uplifted theory will physically make sense and canceled anomalies and such like that, and try to understand the Coulomb branch structure in the 5D theory as well.
So mean literally this, that these two theories are equivalent in some way, or does it mean something less strong than that?
I wouldn't say they're equivalent, just that this will be, so you can actually get this from this compactification down in the circle as well, right? This is the KK compactification we've been talking about. But if you just start from here and uplift it up, it's just conjecture this will be a physically meaningful theory that you're going to get in 6D, meaning it cancels anomalies, self-consistent, makes sense. Like for example, hypermultiplet won't really change much. But let me actually explain the 5D 6D field contents and maybe you can ask. Okay, so for here, I'm gonna first give you a goal of what you're gonna do using this mathematical toolkit to physics. So first, we're gonna compute geometric and topological data. Geometric. What I mean by that, we're going to compute Euler characteristics and the Hodge numbers, the topological invariants. And we're going to understand more geometric data so that we can understand the representations and different type of hypermultiplets charged under each representations. And here, by doing that, we're going to describe Coulomb branch of this 5D theory. And get the 5D and 6D spectra. All right, continue. All right, so let's focus on this 5D field content first. So in 5D, you can compactify directly down here on Calabria threefold, or you can just start from here and then compactify additionally once again in, on the sphere. On the circle. And I'm not gonna consider any non-trivial twisting, meaning the same gauge group will be discussed between 5 and 6D theory. So first of all, we're gonna have a gravity multiplet, which has a metric, graviphoton, and gravitino. So we'll have a metric and two spinners. And then we have a vector multiplet. So this will have gauge field and the scalar. So we'll have all one form fields. Since it's in 5D theory, we're in particularly dualized. So in order to not overcount the multiplet settings, we're not going to talk about tensor multiplet. We'll be able to dualize to vectors. So moving on, we're going to have hypermultiplets. So there will be spinner and the scalar. So this is a scalar that's a it's called as quaternion, coupled to the four real scalars. You can just think of it as a doublet of four real vectors. This is a scalar. This is a spinner, and that's three of them will actually form Majorana spinner. Very good. So this I is the SU2R symmetry index. So it's going to run 1 or 2, which will be in charge for the index if there's half hypers. So A will be then running from 1 to the number of vectors, which will be given by the Hodge number of the Calabria threefold you compactified on. So this is the number of vectors. And then you can get M. That's going to run over twice multiplied to the hypermultiplet numbers, which will be given by the other Hodge number, data that's non-trivial. Very good. So one important thing to note that is that the kinetic term of the vector multiplets, kinetic term, and the graviphoton here, together with the Chen-Simon levels, are encrypted under the free potential. And this free potential is a real function of the scalar fields of the vector multiplet. And more importantly, after integrating out the massive charge vectors and matter fields, this one will receive a one-loop quantum correction. And protected by additional quantum corrections from supersymmetry.
In terms of what these indices actually mean, so like the index A, for instance, you're saying that we have a gauge group of dimension h11 minus 1.
Does this will be the number of vector multiplets? Because A will run from 1 to the number of vector multiplets we have in the 5D theory. Number of the vector multiplets. So like in the theory, you have number of gravity multiplets, number of vector multiplets, number of hypermultiplets. So this will be the number of hypermultiplets. Yes?
Like the index A, so there's some gauge group floating around. Like does A?
Oh, there is a gauge group floating around, but I have not specified any gauge group yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that doesn't tell me the dimension of the gauge group.
Right. That will be giving in the hypermultiplet section when it's explicitly charged. So vectors will be actually transforming in the all the adjoint representation of the gauge groups. In the hypers, we'll actually go through all the irreducible components of the representations we have. So from here, so that'll be the 5D field contents. We'll move all the way over there. So in order to use these elliptic vibration language to the gauge theory, we need to understand the dictionary between the two. And this dictionary was started originally from the Vafa's first paper on F theory, which is called Evidence for F Theory. It was in 1996, a long time ago, which links elliptic vibrations to the gauge theory language. So first of all, we can use codimension one singularities into the gauge algebra. If you actually remember, or let me remind you that here I was using Kodera classification. In the codimension one, that I was saying all the gauge algebras and monotomies will be identified from the codimension one. So what I mean by that, this will be the one encrypting the gauge algebra you need to use in the gauge theory into the geometry. And codimension two singularities will be giving representations. So when you actually do the fiber structures, and in the codimension two, you'll actually see the representation and its weights forming these representation in the codimension two. And then Krappan resolutions mean it's a Coulomb phase. So from earlier, we could get the Krappan resolution by using the sequence of blowups. And for the distinct different Krappan resolutions that's flop related, will be the one that's adjacent to the Coulomb phase. And they will be up to the phase transition. And next is triple intersection polynomials. And this will be the one that's going to be identical to prepotential in the 5D setting, which I just introduced right there. And additionally, this one is not going to be much of a focus of the talk. We'll be more to Vell group, just giving us the fundamental group of the gauge group. So more important data will be this one. Also later that one. So here in field theory, all the trans-Simon couplings were given linear in number of hypermultiplets from this side. And I was saying earlier that Chern-Simon levels are encoded in the prepotential earlier. So from using that information, by seeing the triple intersection polynomials computed from a mathematical point of view, you'll be able to actually get the number of hypermultiplets charged in each representations by using triple intersection polynomials. And this will be depending on only the topology of the elliptic vibration, as it will be identical in each Coulomb phase that you have computed. So it does not depend on the choice of Krappmann resolution. So since we just covered 5D field contents and how it can be used for elliptic vibration, I'm going to move on to 6D field contents. So in 6D, we have gravity multiplet, as usual. So this will have a 6D metric. And to a tensor with a self-dual chirality and a gravitini. And you have tensor multiplet. This is nothing's dualized. You have to write all of them. This is anti-dual, anti-self-dual chirality to tensor, and this one. So you can see that there's the same scalar from 5D and 6D. They're coming from the same origin. And there's vector multiplet. This is quaternion and the hyperarena. So there's the same quaternion coming from Earth, from 5D contents as well. And this is a viral spinner that's invariant under the R symmetry of SU2. So this time you will have, why did I write vector multiplet here? That's hypermultiplets. Forgot to write vector multiplets. So vector multiplet will have the gauge field, gauge in E. So this three this time will form symplectic Majorana. Spinners, which can be compared to the 5D setting. This is what we were discussing yesterday, Richard. Yeah. So here, this time A is the one denoting R symmetry, SU2R. That's the scalar. So this scalar is in the manifold SO1 and T divided by SO(n)T, but this is the number of tensors. And the two tensor, like these, is under the SO1(nT). And this quaternion is giving the quaternionic Kähler manifold of the quaternionic dimension that's the number of hyper. So by this way, you can get all the spectra just coming from the setup of the Kolobiya threefold, except the charged hypermultiplet numbers. So let me actually summarize. Actually, I'm not going to redraw this. Let's summarize it here since you already have conveniently here. So on this side, 5D theory side, we have number of vectors. I'm going to write 5 to denote the difference between 5 and 60. Is then given by this, related by this relation, since in 5D it's dualized with a tensor, which is given by the Hodge number minus 1, as I was telling earlier. And the neutral hypermultiplet that's on charge was given by the other Hodge number of the Kolobiow. And in 6D, we'll also have the vector that's given by this. B is a base. And then the neutral will be given by the other Hodge number. And there's tensor, which is given by the Hodge number of the base. So for color, we have threefold, that'll be fixed. And 60 is on the right side.
So I'm just, what were each of the NV and H?
Oh, V is the vector, H is a hyper, and T is tensor.
What is the zero signifying?
Neutral, that's uncharged.
Uncharged, okay.
So what's missing so far is now charged hypermultiplet. So then I'm going to now explain how we're going to get geometric and topological data and how it will be linked to 5D60 spectra, including the one that we're missing. So first of all, we have to determine a singular fire source model. With the Codera fibers. And if you remember, Codera fibers will be encoding the gauge group G. I mean, gauge algebra in the code dimension 1. And then from here, we're going to determine a Krappan resolution of this Weierstrass model that was singular. And from here, an important thing is that from Batyrev and Konsevich, that the topological invariance and the Hodge, so the Euler characteristic and the Hodge numbers are invariant under the different choice of a Krappan resolution. So they're always identical. Meaning you can just choose one particular Krappan resolution and that'll be enough to just determine what's the topological invariant for the given particular gauge group. So from here, we're going to compute some push-forward formulas that I'm going to explain soon to actually get the total churn class of the resolved elliptic vibration to its base. So from here, we're going to actually get the generating function of the Euler characteristic and can determine for Calabi-Yau threefold what it is. And we're going to apply Calabi-Yau condition as well to get it for our particular physics setting. And from there, we can get the compute the Hodge numbers. So for here, we're going to use the fact that B is a rational surface, since it's a fiber on top of the rational surface, meaning that this Hodge numbers vanishes. And in addition to that, we're going to use Shiota-Tate-Wazir theorem which is going to give you the first Hodge number in H11 as this. So F is the number of geometrically reducible fiber divisors not touching the zero section, meaning for a simple group, it'll be just rank of the gauge group. And then from here, we can compute the other Hodge number, since that's related to this Hodge number and the Euler characteristics. So from here, now we have complete topological invariant data for the Calabi-Yau threefold. And then we're going to now move on to the different type of geometric data by determining the fiber structure of this resolved wire stress model. So what I really mean by that is up till here, it's independent from the choice of Kraepelin resolution. And from here, it'll actually depend on it. Because your fiber structure will change for each of Coulomb branches, since it's in the different branch. So you're going to actually have different type of structures. And from here, in each of the Kraepelin resolution, you can compute the geometric weights and determine the representations in the codimension too. If you remember the dictionary in the front, but I was saying codimension two encodes the representation, and that's where it comes down to. And from there, you can compute the triple intersection polynomial. And by that, I'm going to compute this particularly push forward and the divisor onto the coroots cubic and some manifold. This will be just one for us, for Calabi-Yau. It's always a number anyway, for the elliptic vibration we considered. And from the point of interligator Moers and Seiberg has shown that this is identical to the prepotential, well, this is a with the factor of 6, which is given by this particular information. We write it down. Cubed minus all of them. So this is a simple root, it's fundamental roots. This is the element of all the Cartan subalgebra of the Lie algebra. These are all the representations, and these are the weights of such representation. So we're going to get this, which is a number of charged hypermultiplets under each irreducible representations.
The actual representation you get doesn't have enough choice of preference resolution, does it?
This one is depending on the choice of the Euler gauge group, right? So for example, if you have like G2, you can have what's the easier version. So let's say you have SU2, then you have fundamental 2, adjoint 3, like those. And you can get each charged hypermultiplets.
But I mean, different choices of different Kraepelin resolution.
So you can compute for each. Right, yeah. That one will give actually the same one. So each Coulomb branch is distributed identical.
That particular thing doesn't depend on Kraepelin resolution still.
Yeah.
The choice of Kraepelin resolution.
Yeah. Yeah, the physics should be the same. Very good. And also, one more point. This absolute value is very important, since that's the one that's giving different prepotential for each of the different Coulomb branches. Because different Coulomb branch should have different prepotential. And this lower degree terms don't really matter, since it's protected by Suzy for further quantum corrections. So here I was saying that there's an important piece of ingredient that I'm going to explain, this push-forward formulas. That's going to revisit the math side for a little bit. So I'm going to use this too. One?
In the triple intersection polynomial, you have that you're pushing forward. You've got a bunch of divisors, and then you've got the pullback of M.
Where? Oh, there's some manifold that has to be, but don't worry about it. Good, this is just one for Calabi-Yau threefold at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so in order to do this, I'm going to give you some example of how the Kraepelin resolutions look like in terms of a sequence of blowup. So for example, for SU2, you can have it like with the smooth centers, let's say X and Y, and the divisor of the SU2, let's put it as S. Like a one blowup will actually resolve entirely because we know that there's only one Coulomb chamber, so it makes sense. So SU3, there's two, but I'm going to just give you one, for example. So it's the same blowup, and that's not enough. You have to do one more. So a sequence of blowup looks like this. So in order to do this and compute back and push forward to the base, we're going to use three main push forward theorems that I'm going to present. The first theorem actually gives the total trend class after a blowup along a local complete intersection. This is a theorem by Alufi. So Z and X is the complete intersection. Of, let's say, D non-singular hypersurfaces of Z1 to ZD, since there's D of them, meeting transversally. And then I'm going to use the blowup. I'll just write it on top. That is centered at Z. And I'll do E as the exceptional divisor. Of this blowup F. Then the total trend class is given by this formula. So you have the exceptional divisor and D number of hypersurfaces producted and this factor. Onto the TX, the tangent bundle. And then the next theorem provides a user-friendly formula to compute the invariance of the blowup in terms of the original space. So of the original space, so I'm going to have this formal power series. Of QA. And then the Q of T. Is the associated power series. Note that this coefficient is the pullback. Right. To the coefficient on here. So then we can write this formula that when you push forward the whole power series given by this. So now the last theorem, this one gives a simple method to push forward the analytic expression. In the Chow ring, of the projective bundle, to the Chow ring of its base. It's a direct consequence of the functorial properties of the Segre class. And this theorem is from the same paper. So for here, I'm going to use the line bundle of the Weier stress model. And I'm going to remind you, this was the projective bundle. Onto the base. Then I'm going to write L as the first Chern class of this line bundle, and H as the first Chern class of the dual of the tautological line bundle. Then this is the theorem that push forward of this is given by just literally doing this polynomial onto when this is minus 2L. And then the other piece. And the last term. For that, the push forward of an analytic function of exceptional divisors became a linear combination, as we can tell, of the same analytic functions evaluated at each different point. There's like minus 2L, minus 3L, and this is set 0. Of the defining the center of the blow-up weighted at by the coefficients. So these are so that are like simple rational functions of the class of these divisors. So that one itself will just give the expression after using the theorems. So to summarize, to come back to the original goal, we get the following geometric and topological data that we had so far. So first one is the total number of Kreppmann resolutions. And the graph of flops connecting them. And secondly, we have the fiber structure of each Kreppmann resolution. And we had the weights and representations of the vertical curves comprising the singular fibers and topological invariants, Euler characteristic, and the Hodge numbers. And moreover, triple intersection polynomials. And each chamber, well, Kreppmann resolution. So let's put these into Coulomb branch and the charge hypermultiplet setting in physics. Let's put this into 5D60 theory. So first, what we're getting is the structure of the Coulomb branch of the 5D n equals 1 theory with the gauge algebra and representation. Since we're not in 10D, we need both representation and gauge algebra.
What is the physics data
which is related to the total churn class? So from total churn class, what you're really getting is that you get you have to expand it and get the Euler characteristics. You can get the generating function of the Euler characteristic, then you push it to a particularly Calabi-Yau threefold, and then we can get the Euler characteristics. And then if you move back to what we were discussing earlier by using Shiota-Tate theorem, we can get the Hodge numbers. So that will complete this. And we're going to use these two, as you saw earlier, to get the other remaining 5D, 6D spectra. Do you have a question? No, okay. Right. This is coming from the geometrically engineered elliptically fibered Calabi-Yau threefold compactification. And from here, we can get the number of hypers. Charged under each irreducible representation. So NRI. Then we can check whether if these will be actually giving enough of fixing all this NRI for each of the given gauge theories. And then this will be mapped with the conditions, the anomaly cancellation conditions. In the 6D theory. And in 6D theory, the Green-Schwarz mechanism will actually have, so far we actually didn't input anything more than pure gravitational anomaly, pure gauge anomaly, and mixed gravitational gauge anomaly. So a really good way to analyze what would be possibly checking the anomalies in 6D with Green-Schwarz mechanism at the 6D. And from that on its own, it's going to actually give you the entire number of hypermultiplets charged in each of them. And if you, so in 5D to 6D, we didn't do anything to the hypermultiplets because we didn't do any twisting, but they have identical spectra on the hypermultiplets. So we can match these two and see if 5D solution of what we have for NR is identical to the anomaly canceling solution in the 6D to see if it will be uplifted and giving any meaningful theories in the physics. Yes, Richard? No? Okay. So these has been studied for all the topological invariants, systematic for the simple groups. And for the entire analysis, we're done for like G2, spin 7, spin 8, F4, E7, and S3N for up to 5. But more interesting things happen when you consider semi-simple groups. So it's going to consider semi-simple groups. So this will be in terms of studied by using collisions of singularities. And this is studied for SU2 across some gauge group up till the rank of G up till 3. So I'm going to organize this based on the rank of the gauge group G. That's simple. So when the rank of G is 1, we can only have D2, which was A1 plus A1. Is the simplest. Now this has actually two possible groups of SO4 and the spin 4. Because SO4 is given by the SU2 cross SU2 with a Z2 quotient. And this one does not have a Z2 quotient. That Z2 is the Mortevel group that you're considering here.
Yeah,
acting diagonally. Huh?
Can you can you have a larger model like Vagroup again and get SO3 times SO3?
So in principle, you should be able to. But if you're doing systematic analysis in particular, this method of considering collision of singularities in the world, it turned out the only possible thing you get is acting diagonally. Okay. So like H spin plus minus, you can't really get it by doing this systematically altogether. And the next higher rank is actually more interesting to us as a physicist, since it contains, first of all, SU2 cross SU3, just a non-abelian sector of the standard model. Well, it's in 60, but just what it is. And you can have SU2 cross SP4, which is also interesting because this can also have the Z2 quotient. And then there's SU2 cross G2. Now, this is really interesting. This one naturally appears in the study of non-Hixable clusters. In fact, this one is going to be, why is that? NH, there we go. This has a naturally connection to -2, -3 curves, which is supposed to give this a Hilsbrich-Jung type of singularity of analysis and giving the non-Hixable clusters in the 6D context. So -2 and -3 curves gives naturally the groups associated will be SU2 and G2 groups. So this will be naturally related. And the higher group that has been analyzed so far is SU2 cross SU4. And it's a Z2 quotient as well. So all of these can be explicitly computed on all the things I listed here and can be seen in 5D-6D theories, what happens, and that has been done so far. And in order to really understand this, I can just give you the result for the geometric content first, vaguely, and can come back to anomaly cancellation. So for easiest example will be this SO4 and spin4. So it kind of looks like this. So in SO4 and spin4, they have the same number of Krappen resolutions. So there's only two Coulomb chambers. I'm going to do this plus minus. And in terms of resolution standpoint, this just looks like these two are flop related and can be given by this two different blowups, different sequence of blowups. And the topological and geometric data can be arranged as for SO4 case. The representation we get is the adjoints on both sides and the bifundamental. And the Euler characteristic, K is a canonical class. I'm going to just write T, the T squared. So for this one is SU2 cross SU2. I'm going to put each of the divisor as S and T. And for the case of SO4, they have to satisfy the relation so that S and T together is -2K. Because we have quotient of the Z2. This gives a relation coming from the sections. So for here, we can get the Hodge numbers that I was telling you about. And you can also compute the triple intersection numbers. There are two of them. And for the other one, if you invert the psi 1 and phi 1, just psi 1 was for here and phi 1 was for here, if you invert them, you can get for the other chamber. And you can check this with the prepotential and match them and get the number of hypermultiplets in the charged contents. So you can see that it will be done in that type of manner. I just wrote that so that you can see how it kind of looks like. So I'm not going to write the whole geometric data, but it'll be interesting to see at least different Coulomb structures, a Coulomb branch structure of the different type of groups that has been done. So for that, SU2 and G2. Looks like this. There are four chambers. Oh, that's a terrible picture. There you go. And then the SU2, SU3.
If I look at these expressions, which you've written in terms of K and T, if I express them in terms of S and T, would I say that it's symmetric under?
Oh, no. So I already used this to make it simplified.
It should be symmetric under S and T.
Yeah, it will be absolutely symmetric. Yeah. Okay, just two copies of SU2. And for SU2, SU3, we have eight chambers with the mirror in the middle. Let's see, I should be able to draw this. There we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's a mirror. And interestingly, each half of them are the same type of sequence of Krepman resolution as SU2 cross G2. And this is induced by the involution. This is overall mirror. And that's the inverse map of the Immortal Veil group. So for SU2 cross SP4, or with that overall Z2 quotient, can get three chambers just connected. And as you can see for this one, even with the Z2 quotient, it looks identical. There are not that many Coulomb chambers. So you should ask, does Z2 quotient not modify at all for the number of chambers? That's not actually true. And you can see that for SU2 cross SU4. Okay, let's draw this. Have over a mirror. There you go. So this is how it looks like over Z2. So for without Z2, that's a different color. There we go. So if you add that will be SU2 cross SU4. Now that makes sense, because if you mod out by Z2, there are less representations as it removes fundamentals. And when there's without Z2 quotient, there will be more Coulomb chambers, will be naively what you expect, and that actually matches the expectation. And you can actually find that each wall that changes them and can see explicit flopping curves and determine them explicitly. And you can check the weights and representation that goes along. And that's going to be explicitly matching what you would expect as well. All right. So let's go back to then. So this is the Coulomb chambers. And let's go back to anomaly cancellation. See, it'll finish quickly before it runs out. So as I was saying, in anomaly cancellation, you're going to check with a 6D condition. And I was saying in 6D, it gives the unique one particular set of solution of the charged hypermultiplets. So let's consider a particular case of G1 cross G2, since that's the only thing we considered, which will have entire reducible representations. And Calabria compactifications gave the particular set of spectra to be its vector tensor. But I was saying it's Hodge number of the base minus 1, that's the 9 minus k squared, the canonical class, and the hypers. So hyper will be with the neutral and the charged. So neutral, it was the Hodge number of H21. And then for the charged, We have every single irreducible representations. NRI, this is what we need to understand. I minus dim of RI zero. So for here, we have two things. First of all, we need to cancel pure gravitational anomaly. So that means a trace of the Riemann tensor to the fourth term has to vanish, which will be just this. And then we can write the rest of the anomaly polynomial. It's running out of time, I'm not going to write it. But for that, you can actually see the factor of the term of this has to cancel. That gives the mix of the trace of the field strength and squared and the Ricci tensor squared, which will be this particular term. And these are just given by the trace identities for each of the gauge group. And then from there, we can also know that the I8 has to factor, like in the way that it's going to factor like this. And this is because this can be canceled by adding the counter term in the Lagrangian. And that's going to modify the field strength. And then that's going to cancel explicitly of the I8 mixed gravitational and gauge terms. If you don't know, you can ask me after the talk. So by using these, this actually can be solved explicitly for the all NRIs and give a unique solution for each of the different gauge group that you consider. That's going to give you the set of entire NRIs of the gauge group, and you can match them with the ones that you get from 5D. And if you use only the dictionary I gave you, it turns out it's not enough when you do not have a Z2 quotient, but can use Witten's genus formula in addition to it, then it's enough to cancel all the anomalies and it matches explicitly. So you can see that it will be actually compatible when 5D theories with these gauge groups are uplifted to 60. Oh, I did finish on time.
Is there any questions? I don't know, I feel like I lost track of the overall structure a little bit. So this starting with an elliptic fibration,
mm-hmm.
and you're telling us a 5 or possibly 6D gauge theory.
Exactly.
Fibration is the Coulomb branch of.
So in 5D, I'm describing the Coulomb branch, yeah.
And so the point is that you're reading the theory off from the singularities of the fibration.
Yep, by resolving them, yep.
Each
of the chambers given by the each different Krappmann resolutions.
Right, so the picture we're seeing here, this is like the movable cone.
Yeah, that's the Mohr cone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And each one of the chambers gives you a different theory?
Oh, these are different chambers, so it'll have different, for example, prepotentials. But this is the vial chamber, and inside the sub-vial chamber. So inside the cone, there's this is literally the flop, so you can actually explicitly determine the representation on it, and that's defining between two different phase transitions of the 5D theory. But the whole 5D, any chamber is given, it should give same matter contents.
Else.